Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Edward Snowden has a whole year of freedom in Russia, granted 1 year yesterday by Vladimir Putin to leave Moscow's lovely airport and go anywhere he wants in Russia, knowing that when the year is up, he could face the wrath or indifference of the Russian government, who will then let him go to possibly face the wrath of the U.S. government, which would have had more than a year to figure out how to get him and what to do with the leaker, whistleblower, spy, saboteur, call him what you will. White House spokesman Jay Carney is already thinking about it.
We are extremely disappointed that the Russian government would take this step despite our very clear and lawful requests in public and in private to have Mr. Snowden expelled to the United States to face the charges against him.
But you're going to have to wait a year at least, Mr. Carney, a whole year in Russia. What would you do if you had a year in Russia, knowing you could face decades or even life in prison at the end of the whole thing? You'd probably start out on the Black Sea at one of Vladimir Putin's lavish dachas, hang with some oligarchs on their yachts, perhaps, not too far offshore, though, spend some time in historic Kiev. Oops, can't go there, it's in Ukraine now. You can visit beautiful St. Petersburg, though, and then possibly do a grand tour of some of the immortal shrines to freedom in Russia. Suppose you could visit the old KGB HQ in Moscow.
Do not be alarmed, my friend. We will make you as comfortable as possible.
They have some lovely basement rooms where you can vanish, never to be heard from again, I hear. There's a whole network of Cold War prisons to wander through. And then, for the real freedom fighters and Nobel Prize winners like Andrei Sakharov and Alexander Solzhenitsyn, there are the fabulous gulags to visit. Siberia, Yakutsk, the Arctic. Grab a hammer and crush some rocks. Hard labor never hurt anyone. A year of freedom for Edward Snowden. Well, his dad Lon seems excited about it anyway.
I would also like to thank President Vladimir Putin and the Russian government for the courage and the strength and conviction to keep my son safe. Like any mother or father who loves their child, I love my son.
Lon Snowden, father of NSA leaker Ed Snowden, talking to Russian television earlier this week. But Russia's decision to allow Snowden to stay in the country, even for a year, has soured relations with the U.S. Joining me from Moscow is Stephen Lee Myers, Moscow bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times. Stephen, welcome back to The Takeaway.
It's good to be here.
So, Stephen, how are the Russians sort of greeting this news that Snowden is free to be amongst them? He's not exactly an Andrei Sakharov character among Russians at this point.
Well, you know, it's interesting that popularly, I think he is seen as something of a dissident who's, you know, exposed the surveillance programs of the United States and, you know, in a way that, you know, a lot of people here support, as some do elsewhere around the world, even in America.
So he could have a pretty good time in Russia over the next year.
You know, it's interesting. His lawyer just said this afternoon that, in fact, you know, he's still quite concerned about his situation. You know, I don't think he's going to live in luxurious exile here exactly because his legal fate is very much uncertain. You know, he's right now not in hiding, but he's certainly not in a public place. And he's, you know, found a place to live here, apparently. But it's not like he's going to have a very open existence in Russia, at least for the time being.
As far as U.S.-Russian relations are concerned, this will demand some response, do you think? Is that the expectation at the G8 meeting and meetings already on the agenda, on the calendar for Vladimir Putin and President Obama?
Well, I mean, I think certainly the reaction in Washington yesterday was furious, and there are many people calling for all manner of retaliation against Russia, beginning with the question which the White House has already looking at, of whether or not President Obama should go ahead with a meeting with President Putin, which had been scheduled in Moscow next month after the G20 meeting that's coming up in St. Petersburg. I think it seems pretty certain that that meeting won't happen and that they'll keep some distance from Putin. You know, I mean, the fact is that Russia and the United States have a lot they have to work on together, regardless of whether or not relations are good. And I think that will probably continue. But there's no question that this has really put a chill in the relationship. And, I mean, I don't think it's the only dispute between the two countries right now. They disagree on a lot of things, from Syria to nuclear weapons and Iran and so forth. But it was clearly not a gesture that was appreciated in Washington.
Stephen Lee Myers, Moscow Bureau Chief for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And with us from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace in Washington is the organization's Vice President for Studies, Andrew Weiss. Mr. Weiss served as Russia advisor for Presidents Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush. Andrew Weiss, welcome.
Great to be here.
Has Vladimir Putin painted himself into a corner, or does he really have a play here? It's hard to know how constructive this would be either for Putin, just thinking from his point of view, or U.S.-Russian relations.
I think there's no question that the Russians were trying to get a very quick hit, big propaganda coup by welcoming Edward Snowden, and then it basically blew up in their face. When the U.S. began its pressure campaign and basically cut off the escape routes to South America and other places that might have welcomed Edward Snowden, I think the Russians really realized at that point they had miscalculated. I don't think they wanted this guy permanently on their soil, but that's basically where they ended up.
So they're just buying time with a year, and this whole problem will fester during that year, may get worse, and will certainly be back to haunt us in 12 months.
I really wouldn't focus on the 12-month clock here. I think that's something that's mandated by the way the Russian asylum process works. It's not a magic number. Obviously, if the Russians could wave a magic wand tomorrow and have him exit Russia and go to another country like Venezuela, they'd be all too happy to facilitate that. The practical question is, can you do it? And at this point, it doesn't look that easy. Based on what happened to Bolivian President Evo Morales' plane, a lot of people, I think, are not going to be willing to run the risk of aiding and abetting a fugitive's escape from the U.S. justice system.
Does this in any sense take the pressure off of Barack Obama to try to get concessions out of Vladimir Putin regarding Syria, a much more serious and difficult problem facing U.S.-Russian relations, and the nuclear issues that Stephen Lee Myers talked about a moment ago?
Well, I think Steve's right. You know, the U.S.-Russian relationship was deeply troubled before the whole Snowden mess erupted. And in some ways, we now see this outpouring of emotion on what has already been a pretty gloomy picture. But at the same time, you know, the U.S. is not rushing to get involved in the Syria crisis. The U.S. has kept its distance under President Obama pretty fastidiously for the past 2 years. What we're hoping for is for the Russians to help facilitate some kind of political solution. The burden to promote that political solution really falls almost entirely on U.S. shoulders, because if you remember, the Syrian opposition is deeply divided. They've been losing on the battlefield. You know, the Russian piece of this is actually pretty small, and I don't think we should pretend that the Russians have any kind of magic leverage over Bashar al-Assad. Assad sees himself as being in a fight to the death. It's an existential struggle for him, and he's been completely ruthless in how he's prosecuted the war.
So what would you make of retaliatory gestures such as canceling a meeting after the G20 meeting in St. Petersburg, or just, you know, not even making eye contact at the G20 meeting, those kinds of things, which we expect to see over the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think the White House has taken a close look at what its options are. But, you know, the options aren't great. And I think everyone needs to remember that, you know, we're dealing with a very different Russia than the Russia we had either 20 years ago in the early 90s when the country was completely weakened by the post-Soviet collapse, or the Russia we were dealing with in 2008 when the U.S.-Russian relations totally collapsed under President Bush. Back then, in 2008, there were no channels. There was no effective cooperation on anything. But right now, if you look at it, we have some important issues we're working on together. We're working on Iran together. We're working on what happens in Afghanistan after 2014. We're working on the counterterrorism questions. We're working on nuclear stability. So, you know, the question is, can you find a way to demonstrate your displeasure but not make Snowden a single-issue litmus test that blows up the whole relationship? And I think the White House is trying to walk that line.
Finally, given your knowledge of history, but not meaning to be flip, there are monuments to a sense of lack of history and lack of seriousness regarding freedom of speech in Russia that Ed Snowden, who is now a champion of freedom of speech and small government not surveilling its citizens, he might learn from. Do you consider there's a certain irony here that Edward Snowden is in a land that is not known for, keeping its hands off of its own citizens regarding surveillance?
Well, I think it's really unfortunate that the people who've been sort of doing the color commentary on this drama haven't really focused on exactly how complicated the situation is inside Russia when it comes to free speech, comes to political activism, comes to the ability to criticize the government. And so what, you know, what I think we really see is a modus vivendi between the WikiLeaks organization and the Russian government, where WikiLeaks trains its focus on governments like the United States and gives countries like Russia a free pass. And I think that's shaped a lot of the public reaction here. But, you know, for Vladimir Putin to be running around calling people, you know, guardians of freedom or, you know, human rights activists and all that, you know, hear it coming out of his lips, it is pretty ironic because those are not people he likes to hang out with.
Andrew Weiss served as a Russia advisor for Presidents Clinton and George H.W. Bush. He's the organization, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace's vice president for studies. He spoke to us from Washington, D.C. Andrew, thanks so much.
Thank you.